No part of this program can be used for training artificial intelligence technology. From KDNK Community Access Radio in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States, this is program number 72 of the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience things like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful or just more fun for us and our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people to not only go literally around the world, but around the block, to new adventures in their lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer help them to lead a normal life, to people like me, who are totally blind, to sighted parents who have a blind child, blind parents who have sighted children, blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, there's a relationship between not following up on simple eye care problems, like keeping your glasses prescriptions up to date, and cataract surgery and dementia. Tear gas and contact lenses. A community college can change your life. And the American Indian Alaskan Native Tourist Association, IANTA, has changed its name to the American Indigenous Tourism Association. There's a link between correcting even moderate vision problems as soon as they're identified and reducing your risk of getting dementia, especially for older people, according to research by the University of Michigan.
Through our research, we've learned that vision impairment is one of the risk factors for dementia. So we know there's a lot of other risk factors. We know that hearing impairment or uncontrolled blood sugars or uncontrolled cholesterol, you know, there's many other risks. But through our research, we've learned that vision impairment is one of, and that patients who have any form of vision impairment have an increased risk of dementia. But as that vision impairment gets worse, the risk of dementia gets higher.
That's Dr. Olivia Colleen, a lead researcher of the study.
And I am adjunct assistant professor at the Michigan in ophthalmology, and my clinical focus is actually pediatric ophthalmology, but I do research into vision care and vision health generally for all of all ages.
Just over 12% of the whole group had dementia, but that percentage was higher, nearly 22%, among those who had impaired vision for seeing up close. In addition, one-third, 33%, of those with moderate or severe distant vision impairment, including those who are blind, had signs of dementia. So did 26% of those who had trouble seeing letters that didn't contrast strongly against the background. Even those with a mild distance vision issue, 19% had dementia. After the researchers adjusted for other differences in health status and personal characteristics, people with moderate to severe distant vision issues were 72% more likely than those with no vision issues to have dementia. The gaps were smaller but still large for other types of vision impairment, except mild problems with distance vision, where there was no statistical difference. Those who had more than one kind of vision impairment were also 35% more likely to have dementia than those with normal vision. About 3,000 people participated in the study.
Our results are for patients who are 71 years and older. Is using this nationally representative data set, meaning that the participants are picked and their contribution is weighted so that the results are representative of the nation as a whole.
Alzheimer's Disease International lists more than 100 different kinds of dementia. Dr. Colleen says they didn't differentiate between different kinds of dementia.
What we were looking at in our study was looking at these various cognitive domains, which are part of a standardized dementia screening interview score. And they have various cognitive domains that the definition we used is a definition that's used in a lot of studies, but it's not, for example, I don't have the granular data to say Alzheimer's versus Lewy body dementia. I don't have that granular data in this large data set, but we're using standard research definitions of dementia. And the three cognitive domains that are part of this definition of dementia include memory, orientation, and executive function. Nickname for this score is the AD8 Dementia Screening Interview Score. We know that patients who have severe visual impairment, which would include patients who are totally blind, that their risk of dementia be higher. There aren't a lot of studies that are specifically focused on this patient with severe vision loss. But we know that vision impairment is not the only risk factor for dementia. And so I'd say for those patients who are legally blind or legally blind, that anything that they reduce their risk factors as a whole. So that would be like maximizing hearing. If you have some hearing loss, look into hearing aids. If you are socially isolated or lonely, we know is a big risk factor for dementia. Figuring out what ways you can use to build more community to help with social isolation. Patients who are blind, take advantage of low vision services, whether that means in their community getting more orientation and mobility training, or even learning how to better use on a vision that they do have. All those things, in addition to general health, making sure that blood pressure is blood sugar and cholesterol, avoiding smoking, anything that you do to improve your general health would be helpful in terms of thinking about dementia risk.
Dr. Colleen says their research isn't quite as precise as she'd like it to be.
We don't have studies, for example, that show you don't have glasses and I give you glasses, that for you as an individual, your dementia symptoms get better. Those are the kind of studies that are being carried out going forward really show that causal relationship.
Dr. Colleen says reducing the risk of dementia doesn't have to be complicated.
Anything that patients can do to maximize their vision. So for some patients, that's as simple as getting reading glasses or getting the appropriate glasses to help them see in the distance. For other patients, that might mean cataract surgery or treating their macular degeneration. Anything we do to maximize our vision. When we look at studies, we know that the vision impairment is a risk factor for dementia. There haven't been a lot of studies yet showing that treating the vision impairment makes a difference. There are some that have shown that patients at cataract surgery have a decreased risk of dementia. So things that suggest to us that the more we can do to maximize our vision, lower our risk of dementia is.
Dr. Colleen says that vision loss goes along with aging is not correct.
There is misperception that vision loss is a normal part of aging. As you get older, it's very normal to lose your vision and there's nothing that can be done about it. Many, many people, there is something that can be done. And it can even be as simple as reading glasses or progressive glasses like you got your friends. And it can make a really big difference. And I think that is, for me, it's exciting that you can improve people's vision and their quality of life and also decrease their risk of dementia. They're really simple things like that. Older adults should be getting their eyes checked, even those who have no history of eye problems. So everyone should get a comprehensive eye exam at the age of 40. And then if you're healthy, if you don't have many risk factors for vision problems, people should be getting their eyes checked every couple years in their 40s and 50s. And then if you're 65 years old, every year or two, as the risk of eye problems goes up. These are the recommendations from the American Academy of Ophthalmology. And those types of eye exams allow early detection and treatment of eye problems that could cause vision loss and could increase the risk of dementia. And then I'd say for everyone, whether someone has vision problems or not, just thinking about in general how they can maximize their health and their risk factors. And it's not just the medical things we think about, but it's also thinking about like being socially engaged is really good for our brain. So how can people build immunity, loneliness, and just kind of thinking about wellness as a whole helps stave off dementia.
Progressive reading glasses are available from Amazon for as little as $10. They also make great computer glasses. the Denver Public Library Resource Department, and Dr. Ananya Sen helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. The following story on tear gas and contact lenses first ran on program number 17. We decided to run it again because people are being tear gassed by ICE, either intentionally or if you happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, we thought it would be useful information.
This is a sound you don't want to hear.
The sounds of tear gas canisters exploding near you.
President Bush was trying to decide whether to go to Afghanistan, Iraq, to send troops over. And the citizenry here in Colorado felt a little jittery about that. Felt like he was talking about Iraq a lot, and not much about Afghanistan. So I was doing some news work for KHN Radio out of KATN out of Salida, Colorado. So a group of us decided to go down to Colorado Springs and protest. It was a planned protest. About 4,000 people showed up at a park. And for some reason, as we were dispersing, the city of Colorado decided they were going to tear gas us. I guess they had run out of patience and didn't want us there anymore. And as I was trying to interview some people, we were tear gassed. I wear glasses, so it didn't affect my eyes that much, but I did get a gulp of tear gas, and it was very, very, not painful, but it was very hard to breathe, and what it does, it makes you cough until you end up regurgitating some fluids.
Jamie Lewis, who has post-polio syndrome, couldn't just turn around and run in another direction because he's in a wheelchair.
It was an manual wheelchair, and to imagine trying to juggle a recording device and a microphone and trying to get away from the smoke. It's a very heavy smoke, so that's a good thing you'd see it. So if you see it, you definitely want to run the other direction.
Now Jamie lives in an apartment in downtown Denver over a store that's so close to the Colorado State Capitol building that they board up the store's windows when there might be demonstrations in the area. Which was often last year after the death of George Floyd under the knee of a police officer in Minneapolis. There was one thing that could have made his tear gas experience even more complicated while maneuvering his wheelchair while holding a recorder and microphone. Contact lenses.
With contact lenses, the chemical in the tear gas can get absorbed by the contact lens. And that absorption, if you were to leave the contact lenses in, could cause damage to the eye because it could leach out of the lenses and cause, chronic irritation and could cause damage to the eye. So we always recommend if someone is exposed to tear gas or any other chemicals while they're wearing the contacts to wash their hands first, make sure everything's clean, and then get the contacts out as quickly as possible, and then rinse the eyes with water or saline to protect the eyes, to try and flush out any chemicals.
Dr. Richard Davison, professor of ophthalmology and vice chair of the University of Colorado School of Medicine, and the cornea specialist.
If they don't do that, then they could cause irritation to the cornea and to the surface of the eye, like the conjunctiva. And if it were left in for a long period of time, it could potentially cause permanent damage because we worry about damage to the stem cells of the cornea. The stem cells of the cornea are the cells that allow the cornea to be, to regenerate on the surface and to be nice and clear. And if there were damage to those stem cells, it's possible that people could end up with cloudiness to their cornea and lose vision.
In a perfect world, there'd be a public restroom handy without people in a long line ahead of you trying to get their contact lenses out and rinse their eyes. But we live in an imperfect world. That's why people are demonstrating. If you can't wash your hands,
Great question. I'd still take the lenses out first if you can. The reason why we tell you to wash your hands is just because if any of the chemicals on your hands, you would transfer to the eye, but it's still better to get the lenses out first. So I would say if you can wash your hands, I would take the lenses out first and then start irrigating as quickly as possible. You know, if you don't have saline, you could take a water bottle and try and just irrigate that way. Some people poke a hole in the bottom of their water bottle, whatever you can do. But the faster you get that liquid onto the eye to dilute the irritant, the better it's going to be. I mean, because you really want to get rid of the exposure as quickly as possible. Soft lenses are going to act more as a reservoir for the chemical irritant. But either way, we would want you to take out both lenses, and we wouldn't want you to use either lenses again. Like if you got a bad chemical exposure, tear gas or otherwise, then we would want you to dispose of those lenses and not use them again.
A lot of people with big time vision problems, like cornea transplants and misshaped corneas, wear hard contact lenses called scleral lenses. They're so big, they rest on the white part of your eye, which is called the sclera. Soft lenses can be a couple of dollars each, depending on your lenses, your doctor, and where you get them. Replacement scleral lenses can cost up to $1,000 each.
And that's the problem. And luckily, you know, if you had a scleral, I mean, it is possible that we could clean them thoroughly, polish them, like really try and get things out of there. But we'd want like a professional look at it first before you just toss them. But certainly soft lenses, we would definitely want you to toss. But if it were a very expensive hard lens or a scleral lens, then I would say, you know, we'd want someone to look at that just so they can take a look and make sure there's no damage. And we'd want to do a thorough cleaning.
When Dr. Davidson says, rinse your eyes well, he means really well, like under a shower for 20 minutes. And it might be harder to take them out the longer you wait. Dr. Davidson also says, if you want to participate in demonstrations where tear gas might be used, if you can get by without contact lenses, wear glasses and bring a gas mask or goggles that completely seal your eyes, like swim goggles or the ones you'd use in a lab. If you live somewhere like Jamie Lewis lives, where all the big bus stops are on the far side of where people usually demonstrate, don't put your contacts in until you arrive at work or your destination. This story was suggested by a listener who was helping me on Be My Eyes, and she didn't mention her name.
You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg.
The following story first aired on the Tactile Traveler program number 55.
I used to work part-time in the public relations department at Colorado Mountain College, then a community college. Now it's both a community college and a four-year college. And I found an interesting contradiction. Students who graduated from CMC and then transferred to four-year colleges got better grades than students who attended all 4 years at a four-year college. The interesting contradiction is that anyone can take classes at a community college, even if they didn't graduate from high school or have poor academic records. I wondered how poor students could end up doing so well. What I found opens the opportunity to go to a college for everyone. If a student goes to a community college and isn't ready to take college-level classes, they take remedial classes until they're ready for college-level classes. Not being ready for college-level classes doesn't mean you're not smart. It could mean a lot of things, like your family isn't college-oriented and you didn't have role models of people going to college. I've done stories on a number of people who started in remedial classes and went on to graduate from Colorado Mountain College, four-year colleges, and even graduate school, including a woman who went from cleaning people's homes to getting a master's in geology and working on gas and oil wells. If you're blind and have low vision, and your school system did a bad job of helping you adapt, you may really benefit from community colleges, which have all kinds of programs, in addition to academic programs. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg.
There are more than 2,000 American Indian and Native Alaskan and Native Hawaiian-owned hotels, resorts, restaurants, museums, ski resorts, cultural centers, and tour companies that you can plan an entire vacation around, visiting Indian America or for an interesting stop on any of your travels. But you'll have to make a slight change in how you plan your trip, because the best source of information, the American Indian Alaskan Native Tourist Association, IANTA, has changed its name to the American Indigenous Tourism Association. The name change reflects an expanded, inclusive mission to support and promote tourism for all Indigenous communities in the United States, celebrating the rich, diverse cultures of Indigenous peoples across the United States and its territories. The mission of the American Indigenous Tourism Association is to define, introduce, grow, and sustain American Indigenous tourism that honors traditions and values. This strategic evolution positions the organization to better serve and advocate for all Indigenous tourism operators and communities, fostering economic development and cultural preservation, according to an association news release. Travel serves as a catalyst for a productive U.S. economy and helps power the success of other industries. Indigenous-owned hospitality businesses contribute $11.6 billion in annual sales to the tourism and hospitality sector in the U.S., according to the Economic Impact of the U.S. Indigenous Tourism Business Report, produced by the American Indigenous Tourism Association in partnership with Honolulu-based SMS Research. Native nations and communities who are looking to start or expand their cultural tourism footprint can find resources at AmericanIndigenousTourism.org. And visitors interested in learning more about Indigenous cultures can visit DestinationNativeAmerica.com. For a detailed story on all of the neat things you can do in Indigenous America, like staying in a teepee, check out the story, Making Reservations on the Reservation, on the Tactile Traveler, program number 37. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Why? It's my talking scale, reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please send us an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell traveler the American way, with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to the Tactile Traveler at gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on AfterSight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and on Audio Information Networks in additional states. It's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine and available wherever you get podcasts. And by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people and organizations that made today's program possible. Be My Eyes Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Megan Passmore, Kaylee Romero, Evan Starnes, and Raleigh Burley. This has been The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This has been a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.